All right, this is The Flop House. I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
And I'm Elliot Kalin. And Dan, you wanted to follow the Stu bandwagon because he's a trendsetter.
Yeah. So this is a mini episode. We do these in the off weeks when we don't drop a full episode. And Stuart introduced a new segment last mini episode called Missed That Movie that I was quite taken with.
Catch That Kid.
Yep, it was called Catch That Kid's Movie, Rusty, A Dog's Tale.
Now, Dan, I hate to interrupt all the flow you got spitting, but just letting you know, I only got two beers down here in this basement that I'm sitting in to record this. So you got to wrap this bad boy up in two beers.
Stuart, you're in a basement. That's a below level room. What's another word for like a below level room?
I don't well.
No, like maybe one you'd find in like a castle.
Okay, like a dungeon?
Possible. And like you're kind of a fanatic about the things you love. You know, like what's another word for like a fanatic or someone who's just kind of gets so excited about the stuff they love?
A freak?
Okay, and now in a dungeon. Oh, I already said castle earlier. I should have waited to use castle till now. Anyway.
Oh, wow, yeah.
You're becoming the castle freak is what I'm saying. Wow. So your ding dong better watch out.
Oh, man. Yep.
Okay, well, that's so, over.
Took us a while, but we got there.
So, Stuart, how quickly would you say is a single beer consumption? What rate are we?
I mean, the thing is that you're going to have to watch my screen and watch how much of my beer I'm drinking.
Just guess.
The better you're doing, the slower I'll be drinking.
Okay, and I'll try and gauge the relative heaviness of the beer that you're lifting to your lips by how much strain I see.
And if you're doing a bad job, I'm going to be drinking it faster.
Oh, no. Well, I better get started. Okay, so I watched a movie called Get Even. Now, that's all one word, Get Even.
Uh-huh. Okay, it's not Getting Even with Dad, starring Macaulay Culkin and Ted Danson.
No, it is Get Even. And it is also known as Road to Revenge. I read an interview with the guy who did this. Apparently, there's a third. These are actually separate cuts of the movie.
When you say the guy who did this, can we have some more? What was his role?
I'm gonna fucking get to this shit, Elliot.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
Usually, someone would say like the director or the screenwriter,
Well, you will see why the guy who did this is, in fact, the most appropriate way to refer to it. But there's also a third cut of this movie that's called like Champagne and Bullets or something, some bullshit like that. I didn't write it down because I did these notes before I read that interview, but the film...
and the notes had locked themselves up. It was too late.
The film stars John DeHart, who's also Elliot, the writer, co-director, composer, and producer of this movie. So he is, in fact, the guy who did this.
No, you're right. In film school, when they talk about an actor, writer, director, composer, the correct term is guy who did this.
Yes. Yeah, and it's John DeHart.
John DeHart.
John DeHart. So obviously he's a member of the Hart Foundation. So what's his relationship? Is he like the brother of Brett the Hitman Hart? Is he Owen Hart's child?
Now,
is he
how are you
Jim
spelling
Lee
Hart?
Anvil Neidhart's? I mean H-E-A-R-T.
No, incorrect. This is John D-E space H-A-R-T. He used to be a lawyer. He was a lawyer at the time this movie was made. Maybe the timeline is a little confusing depending on what you read.
Was he disbarred? Was he disbarred during the course of the movie?
He was definitely a lawyer after this movie. Whether he was a lawyer before is what's in question. But,
so you're saying you did not go into the public records that are available?
No, I didn't. I didn't go into a what if Penny might a dinosaur sort of rabbit hole of madness and sexual intrigue to find out what's going on. But this also stars Wings Hauser, William Smith, and Playboy model Pamela Jean Bryant. And and it may be reductive to refer to her that way, but that is definitely, I'm sure, 100% the reason why this guy cast her. Because this is a vanity project through and through, and there's a special type of bad movie, The Vanity Project, that is often a special flavor of bad because it is an excuse for some person of questionable talents to live out their fantasies of, you know, being like an action star and kissing pretty people.
So you know? You're saying the kind of the what we would call the D'Angelo, the Frank D'Angelo way.
It's a Frank D'Angelo. It's a bit of a Neil Breen, although he doesn't have like the weird madness of a Neil Breen. He just seems like just a dude who wanted to. He's like, I took some karate classes. I want to make an action movie.
It's kind of like every role playing game I played in high school.
Yeah. Now,
Dan, I'm surprised you're not mentioning that Pamela Jean Bryant appeared in the movie H.O.T.S., Hots.
Uh-huh.
I definitely would have if I had known. I introduced some friends to the film Joysticks recently, and I said that it's probably second only to Hots in my enjoyment of dumb 80s sex comedies.
Joysticks has King Vidiot in it, who is one of the greatest punk characters ever put on film.
Yes, played by the great John Grease, who you may remember from Real Genius or Terror Vision, or he was one of the CIA buddies in all three Taken movies.
I love the part in Joysticks where he goes into Joe Don Baker's house and he comes through a window and he goes, why don't you use the door? I hate doors. Well, take a chair. I hate chairs. And I think he kicks a chair over and he asks, and he's like, I'll do your plan for you, evil rich man, but I want wheels. And he gives him those tiny little weird riding contraptions.
Now, I know this isn't a Joysticks podcast, but I will say
that, why is this not a Joysticks podcast?
The two so-called villains in Joysticks are so much more sympathetic than the heroes, because the heroes are like a smug asshole like frat guy who runs the arcade and uses it to hit on women, a would-be like sort of party animal dude who actively encourages the nerd to, you know, like molest the bad guy's wife in the worst scene in the movie where they're breaking and entering into his home, and then just a, you know, a nerd that is not a likable nerd, just kind of an off-putting, annoying nerd. But on the other hand, you have John Grease, who's totally fun, and Joe Don Baker, who's Joe Don Baker. So,
yeah,
I know which side I'm on.
JDB.
But we're not talking about Joystick.
Yeah, the notorious JDB. Anyway, so what we're talking about, this other movie that has three names. Which name did you watch it under?
I watched it under Get Even.
Okay.
And so let me get into the plot of this thing, such as I remember it. Now, you have to realize that, as is part of our new world that we live in, I was watching this as part of a group watch that we were chatting during.
Okay.
So my notes are a little fuzzy between that and the fact that this movie defies logic and sense.
Okay.
So at the beginning, some dude who looks like Robert Evans, or kind of like Bernie from Weekend at Bernie's, like just combine those two.
Identical twins, yeah. I often get them confused. And they're both dead now, so, you know, they're even more similar.
Yeah, when I started my VHS tape of Weekend at Bernie's in the middle, I was like, oh my God, what happened to movie mogul Robert Evans?
But, so this guy shoots up some people in a house. Mm-hmm. And I think that the thing is that he's, like, corrupt and he shouldn't just, like, open fire on these guys. It's kind of unclear. But anyway, 10 years later...
To be honest, corrupt is a minor way of putting that someone shoots up a bunch of people in a house. I mean, if you're looking for the reason why he's not good after that, I think...
Okay.
The forest for the trees.
In this case, like, I'm making a distinction of intent, Elliot. Like, he may just be a bad cop.
Yeah, it's not like he's going to jail for gambling.
You're saying it's not one of those scenarios where he lost, it was like a fire hose in a cartoon and he just lost control of it and was spraying all over the place. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, you know, maybe he's just gun crazy and scared versus like he's eliminating people purposefully, let's say.
Okay.
But either way, he's going to be our bad guy. So 10 years later, that corrupt cop is a corrupt judge. Okay, so meanwhile, we meet our hero. He's got a mustache, he's an ex-cop, and he sort of gives off this vibe if, like, a cowboy was, like, a middle-class dentist. And early on we see him hitting a bunch of punching bags, like, 30 times, but they're just from, like the same three repeating angles, one of which is upside down.
Oh,
like,
cool.
They just flipped the film. They didn't
They flew to Australia for that shot.
He wasn't like on his like head. when he was kicking these bags. I just want to make that clear.
So he's not a kickboxer, he's just a hand boxer.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Or a punch boxer, I guess you'd call it.
Our hero goes to this bar, and he's reconnecting with his ex.
I think they do call it punch boxing when you use your fists, right?
I think so, yeah.
I mean, that's the only thing that would make sense.
If you look at the ticket, it says punch boxing, because they don't want another football scenario where people use their hands much more than their feet in that game. It's now, just a poorly named game. Or baseball, where it's like, you're not hitting the ball with the bases. Or hockey, what is that? It's not even it's not related to David Hockney's work, so I don't understand why you're calling it that.
I thought that punch boxing referred to this type of boxing performed by Punchy, the Hawaiian punch pitchman.
Unlicensed boxing where the other person does not realize they're in a boxing match.
Exactly.
And they think they're agreeing
to is someone asking them if they would like a nice Hawaiian punch.
It's a strange ad campaign because what they're basically saying is if you ask for our product, you'll get punched in the face.
And it's not to be confused with what happens when my wife tells me to clean out our storage area and I just start punching boxes because that's punch boxing.
Well, that's all box punching.
So anyway...
What did I say?
Punch boxing is when you have, it's like a Punch and Judy show, and it's puppets that box, like those boxing nun puppets.
Oh, okay. That's when you take a punch doll and you put it in a box.
Exactly. It's also called packing.
So this guy is a kickboxer and a punch boxer. And, I mean, he's a kick punch boxer, which is really what kickboxing should be called, because they do punch people. So there's
that's not what the name tells me.
But so this guy is at a bar reconnecting with his ex, and he sings a song at everyone's insistence. He gets up and sings with a band. He sings a song called The Shimmy Slide, which I read. It's the only song that he bought rather than wrote himself, and it is obvious because it is the only one that shows any sort of understanding of songwriting. But he sings the whole song. And his eyes are kind of that sort of discomfort that like David Byrne's eyes have when he's singing Psycho Killer, but like that is a put on of a character he's doing, whereas this guy just seems like he thinks that he should sing in a movie but doesn't know how to do it.
So what I'm taking from you, and correct me if I'm misinterpreting, but I think I'm pretty dead on, is you're saying that David Byrne is kind of a poser, he's not authentic, whereas this guy is the real deal.
I mean, yeah, this guy is sort of like, it's like naive art, you know?
So we know that this guy's like a badass warrior, and he's got the heart of a poet. But what does he do for work? Is he a cop? Do we know that?
Is he
a claims adjuster? Oh, he's an ex-cop.
I think he has money for some reason, but I forget what it is.
Well, maybe he's a day trader in addition to being an ex-cop. Or maybe he was a millionaire when he became a cop.
Maybe he won the McDonald's Monopoly game.
Yeah. Maybe he sold his life story to a magazine. Mm-hmm. Like highlights for kids. He's Goofus.
He's Goofus. Yeah.
And what's interesting is that Gallant, actually, Gallant sold his life rights just for a lump sum, whereas Goofus went with the percentage and is raking in money to this day. So in this case, Goofus really made the right decision and did the right thing.
Yeah.
I mean, Goofy did lose a little money when Goofy sued him for copyright infringement. But
he had to sue him in ancient Rome because that's the only place where Goofy is pronounced Goofus. So it ended up being a wash for everybody involved.
Yeah. Well, anyway, this gang of evil cowboy like shit kicker types come in and they start a fight.
And this movie's set in modern times, right?
It's set in I think it was made in 91.
probably not in 2020.
So it's set in those times.
It's set in 2020, but they all have flying cars and headsets that allow them to control their shoe computers and things like that.
And nobody is in quarantine.
And I think it's at this point that his friend shows up, played by Wings Hauser. His friend is named Huck Finley.
Oh, and, Mark Twain can't sue him. Sorry, they learned from the Goofy v. Goofus case.
Yeah, and it's really obvious that Wings Hauser is improvising all of his lines. You get the feeling that he knows that he's the only real actor on set, so he's like, I can push these people around and do whatever I want.
Now, do you think it was disappointing when Wings Hauser when they did the TV show Wings, and he's like, I'm a shoo-in for this. I'm going to be the star. And then he didn't get the role that eventually went to went to a TV's Monk.
Wings Daily.
Yeah, well, that was the thing. He was like...
Wings Weber.
He's like, I've looked at the script, and there's nobody playing the role of the hanger. Mm-hmm. But me, Wings Hauser, I'm a house for Wings. Of course, I should be the hanger.
I'm housing Wings. And they're like, there's no hanger in the show. It all takes place like in the terminal.
And then his friend was like eating like a lot of chicken wings. At the same time, he's like, look at me. I'm housing Wings too. And they all had a good laugh about it.
Yeah. I mean, Wings Hauser now, of course, works, we all know, as a Wings hoser, someone who washes off the barbecue sauce from wings for people who don't want sauce on their wings.
Now, what do yoga hosers do, Elliot?
My guess is that they make pantyhose for yoga. So it's kind of like a stretchier pantyhose, either that or they hose off people who just did yoga, like a really hot yoga. They just
And then when they're done working, they go home to their rich parents who make movies.
Okay, so Mustache Hero and his...
Now, wait, I should mention that there is also a job, coal hoser, and you hose coleslaw off of plates when people don't want coleslaw, yeah.
Anyway, so our hero and his ex...
Wait, are Cole Hauser and Wings Hauser related?
Okay.
I don't think they are, but you got to assume it. Mm-hmm. But they're not, I don't think. Yeah. Oh, no, wait, no. Cole Hauser is Wings Hauser's son, according to Wikipedia.
Oh, wow, that's great.
The hero and his ex have dinner, and the hero tells a couple of sexist jokes to the waiter, and during this, the ex is, like, just gazing at him with so much love, just, like, fascinated by everything that is happening, and it really feels like, I don't know, like this, like a middle-aged man who has paid an escort who hates to be there. Like, that is, like, the vibe that is being given off in this relationship.
Are we supposed to think the jokes are funny?
I think so. I think that... So, speaking to the issue of Wings Hauser improvising, this interview I read, the writer, director, producer, actor, he was saying, like, oh, yeah, Wings improvised all this stuff, but I didn't mind because he always hit my jokes. So, like, the jokes he was very proud of. I see Stuart has opened his second beer.
Oh, boy, yeah.
It's like the sword of Damocles over my head.
You might be running out of time here, Dan. You might want to speed it up on this one.
Okay, so the next day, I think, it's hard to judge time in this movie. He's with his ex at his house, and she's like, hey, are you still trying out for acting parts? Because apparently, in addition to being an ex-cop, he was an ex-actor. And he says he's been trying occasionally, and she's like, oh, you're using the same old audition monologue? And he starts doing it, and it's the goddamn to be or not to be soliloquy from Hamlet, which he reads.
Go with the best. Go with the best, Dan.
He reads basically all of, and he's like reading it in this way that like reminds me of like the best actor in high school who is reading like Shakespeare, and he thinks that he's doing a really good job because he's like declaiming it in a very dramatic way and speeding up and slowing down, but there's no sense of understanding of what the text actually means or any emotion behind it.
All I heard was you said he was the best actor.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And now anyway. Does he credit William Shakespeare with additional material?
No, but there is a scene later on where Wings Hauser is drunk and he's talking to like some bad guys and he's like, this man can talk Shakespeare. It's very important to him that this is a thing.
And he's talking about his friend and not just one of the bad guys, one of the henchmen who's like, so I'm Caliban, who cares?
Yeah. And I looked it up, this lawyer did direct a local production of Hamlet, so he feels Hamlet in his bones.
Yeah, that's a pretty bad, I mean, they're working on a cure for that. But it's still, I mean, there's a treatment, but there's not a cure for when you feel Hamlet in your bones.
Yeah. I mean, it keeps putting it off.
Yeah. Yeah. They call it Denmark marrow. Anyway, Dan, continue.
Which is different from Danish disease, which is when I can't stop eating these delicious Danishes. Anyway.
Oh, God. Oh, boy. Oh. You performing at like an old folks home later tonight, or?
So the ex talks about how that you know, she had left him because he was a cop, and after that she got mixed up with, of course, some Satan worshipers who were led by the corrupt judge we learned before, we saw before.
Thank God it ties into the characters that we've already been aware of, and that it's not like a side quest against Satanists.
I mean, and this is like halfway through the movie at this point too. Like,
I mean, we're more than halfway through the beers at this point. So
okay, so she saw these Satan worshippers sacrifice a baby, so she ran away to hide. She's worried that they're going to be after her.
I mean, I don't mean to, you know, I know I might make some people mad, but I think it's really bad when that happens. I kind of want to make a stand.
Stuart, we don't need your virtuous signaling about how much you want babies to not be sacrificed.
You know, I think children are our future guys.
Our future guys and future girls, Stuart.
They are our future guys. Yeah. When you
future non-conforming people, Stuart.
Thank you, got me.
In New Jersey, as everyone knows, guys is a unisex term. And when you get a birth certificate, it does say future guy. It says name of future guy. Date of birth, future guy. So, you know, he's totally right. If we're in New Jersey right now, are any of us in New Jersey?
I'm the closest. Well, no, you're at Stuart. Well, I don't know.
I mean, you guys live so close together. It's not like he's...
Elliot, see, I look behind you in your office, and there's a giant wall hanging that is a painting of the outline of the state of New Jersey in the colors of the Italian flag, so
yep,
I think
you know
you're
it.
Closest.
I mean, that's because Jersey's in my heart. You know, I feel it in my bones, which, again, I mean, there's a treatment like for, but there's not a cure for right now when you feel Jersey in your bones.
And underneath that tapestry you have, it looks like there's a plate of offerings to some kind of New Jersey god. It's like Zeppelis and like a cheesesteak.
We're actually deep fried
Oreo.
Yeah, and also just something that says waiting online for tickets and sneakers. Just words and phrases we use in New Jersey. Mischief night and stuff like that. It's actually an offering not to a Jersey god, but to a Jersey devil.
All right, well, let's move along back to Get Even.
Okay, so these Satanists have sacrificed a baby, which I gotta ask her, what did you think you were gonna get when you got mixed up with these Satanists? Like,
she was confused, you know, she was alone, you know. Let's not judge her after that. I mean, she did the right thing and left after the baby.
I mean, she's not listening, Dan.
She did the right thing and after witnessing a horrific crime and told nobody ever.
Yeah. So, okay. And sometimes somewhere in here they have sex. And for the first scene, it looks like she was like contractually told him not to touch her boobs at all, because he's like doing like almost like there's a force field around her the whole time.
Yeah.
But then later on, you know, whatever. The whole time, though,
not sure what that's both weirdly specific and weirdly general and abstract.
I mean, the thing was, like, my theory was that, like, she had this no touching clause with this like weird dude. But
Dan, you can't fool me. There ain't no touching a clause.
But then he's like rubbing ice on her in the next scene, so who knows? But then,
I mean, he certainly shouldn't touch her with claws. I mean, who is he, Freddy fucking Krueger?
But the whole time during this scene, he's also on the soundtrack singing a folk duet with a woman, and it's mixed so like the soundtrack is as loud as any talking. Meanwhile, there's this a subplot that doesn't go anywhere and is the worst part of the movie by far. His friend Huck is drunk and he hasn't been paying child support, but still somehow we're supposed to sympathize with this guy, because his wife comes over and she like rips her shirt apart, at, like exposing herself, and then goes outside and tells the police that he assaulted her, and he gets arrested. So that's the grossest, worst part of the movie, with this like fake accusation, but fortunately that goes nowhere, so let's forget it ever happened.
Okay.
Already did.
Glad we mentioned it.
I mean, legally he had to, right?
Legally. So... I mean
that's part of the curse he's laboring under. If he doesn't list every part of the movie, he's gonna have to spin his hair into gold.
No, I do think that for this small subset of the listening audience that runs out and tries to find this movie afterwards, you just should be aware They, you know, just maybe fast forward. So somewhere in here, Huck gets out of jail. We see him in the pool with some women, like wearing fully clothed. He's just standing in there. He rants more improvised dialogue.
Now, fully clothed, you mean like wearing a business suit? Tuxedo? What is he?
Like, just like a button up and some parka? Jeans.
Oh,
just standing in the shallow end with some.
Does he tuck his button down in, or is he more like?
No. This guy,
Sunday
he's a wild
afternoon.
Man. Yeah.
Just got out of church. Untuck that shit. Get ready to relax. Yeah, God's time is over. It is time for you.
Yeah, it's you and Chili's time. That's it.
There's another sex scene in a bubble bath where he drinks champagne super lazily, and there's more singing on the soundtrack of the same
song.
Now,
when you
song.
Say he, which of the two despicable characters is it? Or is it the judge?
No, the main guy.
Okay, the main
so
guy.
So they get
mustache.
Married.
And what's the guy's character's name with the mustache?
I have no idea. Let's call him Stashy. Stashy gets...
You got it.
So he gets married to this old flame. And he is wearing, for the wedding, a tracksuit with big stripes on it. This guy
like
favors...
Like he's a prisoner?
Yeah, I describe that as a tracksuit.
This guy favors kind of like big, like, polo, sort of hockey jersey kind of shirts, and then, like, leather pants together. He wears, like, black leather pants with that.
Okay,
it's
interesting.
An interesting personal style.
So what it's from, it's like, up top, I'm a dad, down below, I'm a biker.
Mm-hmm.
It's like what if Lenny Kravitz grew up in Philadelphia as, like, a Flyers fan?
Yeah, if Lenny Kravitz and Kevin Smith had a child.
So, the bad guys, the bad cowboys from earlier, I guess are connected with the Satanists somehow, and they see the woman.
Yep.
And so they chase the motorcycle that our two leads are on, and it's a very slow car chase. One of them's in a car, one's in a motorship. I'm just using car chase to describe the genre of thing that we're talking about.
Sure,
a vehicle
sure. Yeah.
Chase.
Okay, yeah.
And the woman is either dies in an accident or maybe is shot because she has like a something that looks like a wound on her head in a very bullety way. But I think she just crashed.
I mean, are they shooting at them?
I think they are threatening them. So I but
okay.
Anyway,
Dan is making such a good argument against the use of eyewitnesses in court cases.
Yeah. So she's taken to the hospital where she dies, and a young nun comforts our hero.
Okay.
And so at this point, Audrey and I ate a mango. So it's a little fuzzy because we went to the kitchen and we cut open a mango and we're eating it.
Is that code or something?
No, there's no... No code. It's
is that like
just,
a drug thing? Like, hey, you're going to eat a mango, man.
Just
cut it
a delicious
open.
Mango. Just, you know.
Now, and I assume
one
the mango
the
was
fruits.
Either so...
I know that...
It was so large that it could not fit through the door between mm-hmm. where the kitchen is and where the television is, so you couldn't bring it back to the room where you were watching the movie?
I mean, we did, but it's, you know, like, I know you don't understand because you hate all fruit, but a mango is a difficult fruit to prepare for eating. There's a lot of outside... that needs to be pulled apart. You gotta like
so,
cut around.
Yeah.
But it's clearly a two-man job.
And it requires a lot of cutting. You had to pull out your ceremonial daisho, use your katana and wakizashi to slice it into slightly smaller pieces.
Yeah, and now this does remind me of the time, I forget what movie it was, when you said you were having trouble keeping track of it because you were folding laundry at the time.
Anyway, so, well, I mean, also this movie's hard to keep track of because none of it makes sense. But, so this is a little more fuzzy, but the guy wants revenge for his wife, so he takes the bad gang down, he fights the corrupt judge, and he burns mm-hmm. down a building with the judge inside, and it all happens like really fast, considering this is what the movie's been building toward, and theoretically this is an action movie.
Mm-hmm. I mean, who postulated that theory, that it was an action movie? Because it sounds like a musical to me. It sounds like a musical romance to me.
You're not wrong, Elliot, but I mean, any movie that starts off with a man just like wailing on punching bags for a long time, I figure it's going to have some action.
Yeah. What's the poster look like? Describe the poster to me.
And if there isn't a real one, just design it for us then. Design it for us. What would you make the poster?
Yeah, if you were trying to sell Get Even to somebody.
Now, clearly you're putting that Jurassic Park skeleton Tyrannosaur on there just to get people in through the door.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because that Tyrannosaurus skeleton puts butts in seats. I don't know if you heard a little movie called Jurassic Park, but it was huge.
I mean, I don't want to... I mean, like, no one at home can see this, but I actually do feel like I have to really genuinely show you what it looks like if you look this movie
okay,
up.
I see a blurry, okay, I see a blurry phone screen.
It looks like a...
I think
it looks like a baseball card. There. Oh,
okay. I see
shit.
Dan, can you turn blur background
okay,
off
I'll turn
on your
blur
Skype? Because I think that's
off.
What's really getting in the way here. Here, take a look at this, but first let me turn Hailstorm on.
Yeah, sorry.
Here, let me. I have this painting I want you to look at. First, let me smear chicken grease all over your glasses.
Wait, how do you turn it off?
Oh, boy.
Oh, no.
Choose background effect.
Yes.
None. Okay.
Oh, man.
All right, now,
I'm going to see, like, Samara from The Ring crawling out of the back of Dan's bookcase. Whoa.
Okay. Wow, it does
that
look very,
pretty good,
very
huh?
collage-y.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nope. So does she wear that outfit in the movie?
So the outfit that is Elliot is talking about is some thigh highs with a garter, you know, like a lingerie top. She's sort of bent over. She does not wear this in the movie. The hero is looking... like maybe he's sort of he's fucking
jacked.
Well, but he's got this look in his eye, like maybe he's like sort of a fringe militia guy who got woken up in the middle of the night and thinks shit's going down.
He has the kind of look you see on if you ever go to a barbershop in a suburban town, not the best barbershop in town, one of the more middling ones, and you're looking at the like poster of different hairstyles, and it's clear that they couldn't get like the really fancy poster of hairstyles. Like that guy could be on that.
He has a look on his face like somebody just put Hank Williams Jr. ketchup on my blue jeans on the fucking jukebox, and he's like, "I'm gonna beat some ass."
Yeah, and we are talking about the picture that is associated with this film on IMDb under the title Road to Revenge. So if you want to see what we're talking about,
well,
so
let me see it again, Dan. Can you hold it up to the camera again?
I mean, who am I talking?
I say knowing that I could look it up on my computer, and there's
I'll
no
probably put the picture.
Yeah, why don't you just slap that on a birthday cake for me and send it over? Yeah.
Now, who's that anyway. In the lower right hand corner? It looks like Hitler is holding a gun.
I think that is the bad guy.
Well, if it's Hitler, then it certainly is, Dan. You shouldn't have to think about it.
No, he's the bad guy in the movie. He does kind of look like Hitler crossed with Charles Bronson here.
Okay, sure.
Anyway.
Arguably, both of them have problems with minorities.
We haven't gotten to the best...
I mean, Charles Bronson's characters.
His characters in the Death Wish movies. Yeah, you don't mean
so
Charles Bronson himself, yeah.
Let's get to the finale, the grand finale of this.
Oh, so the finale is not when he burns down the building with the bad guy in it?
No, there's a denouement after the climax, and that is that the nun comes, and she visits the hero at the grave of his wife, and she is, like, really super insistent on getting a ride back to the hospital. Like, you know, like he's like, I'd like to stay with my dead wife. He's like, no, you got to take me back to the hospital. And it really is kind of like, all right, back off, nun. But it turns out that the reason she wants this ride so bad is that she's got a big surprise at the hospital. The hero's wife is not dead. The police just made her pretend to be dead because killers were looking for her. So he killed all these people in revenge, but she was still alive.
So is he going to face any charges for this? Or
I don't think so. They seem to be pretty happy and just go on about with their lives. And,
but wait, so they had a funeral and everything with a tombstone?
Yeah, that's the thing. There's a grave.
I mean, you're going to need more than one tombstone to feed a whole funeral.
So
if you get a large and it's a small funeral, maybe. I don't know.
Fuck out of here.
The thing about these vanity project movies is they often have some like really kind of unpleasant elements where like the guy behind it is working through some things or whatever, or like uses it as a chance to like have love scenes with women he finds attractive or whatever. And there are these off-putting elements, but I would make a pitch that these movies also, because of the fact that they're these vanity projects, are just kind of one step away from being a parody of male ego. Like, you watch this movie, and it could have been written, I think, as a comedy about a man who is, like, like just this mediocre dude who thinks he's the greatest.
Yeah, I think somewhere Vincent Gallo is listening to our podcast and he's like, that motherfucker.
He got there first. I guess what you're saying, Dan, is there's a very thin line between parody of the male ego and expression of the male ego.
Yes.
Like the purest expression of the male ego enters the realm of caricature.
Of ridiculousness, which this movie definitely does.
Well, so, like a movie like, Under the Silver Lake, I think, takes that concept and plays with it and makes fun of it. So much so that it ends up being off-putting to many people.
Yes.
I have to say, I got about 15 minutes into that, and I was like, I'm going to save this for another time. It was, I don't really know what he's getting at here.
But yeah, I mean, that's basically it. It's it's like a almost like a parody of an L.A. noir.
And it
plays on the concept of like male entitlement and the male ego, but it does it so much so that it is off-putting.
So guys, what were the made-up categories we came up with? Okay, glad you missed it.
Glad you missed it.
Sad you missed it.
Or had to go on. Had to go on miss it.
Yeah. Had to go and miss it. Well, I don't know. I mean, I was kind of divided until I saw that fucking poster, dude. I want to fucking spin up that CD. I want to take that DVD box, which I'm sure is one of those cardboard jobbies with the weird plastic thing that you got to snap and like open the cardboard up.
I mean, my guess is this is the kind of movie where the DVD comes in a paper sleeve with a little plastic window on it.
A little plastic window and like a post-it with a heart. I don't know where this came from.
One of those
from.
Blockbuster guaranteed entertainment stickers, like half ripped off.
But the title of the movie is written in Sharpie on the disc itself.
I don't know. You know, it sounds a little bit like I'm sad we missed it, but it also seems like, I don't know, maybe I'm going to have to go unmiss it.
This is a movie I've never seen, but I've heard about before. And mm-hmm. Dan, you've made me want to finally experience it for myself, although it does sound terrible.
Yeah,
it is. But I've seen, you know, a fair amount of like these like bad movie nights with friends lately, and this is one that everyone seemed to thoroughly enjoy. So, you know,
cool. So we did it, guys. And I got a little bit of this old brewski left. So let's get real, all right?
Oh God,
let's talk about some personal beefs.
Oh, let's not. So I guess that's the end of our little Flophouse mini. Thanks for joining us again. Next week we'll have a full-length episode. But until then, I've been Dan McCoy.
I've been Stuart Wellington, a representative of the Max Fun Podcast Network.
And I'm Ellie Kalin, who I guess is not a representative of the Max Fun Podcast Network.
No, I mean, I just don't have any cool credits, so I thought I'd give myself one.
Bye, everyone.
Strange planets, curious technology, and a fantastic vision of the distant future. Featuring Martin Starr.
So we're going on day 14. Shuttle still hasn't come.
Aparna Nancherla.
The security system provides you with emotional security. You do the rest.
Echo Kellum.
Can you disconnect me or not?
Hari Kondabolu.
I'm staying.
From Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Jeffrey McGiver.
Could you play Cyndi Lauper's Girls Just Want to Have Fun?
It's The Outer Reach. Stories from beyond.
Now available for free at MaximumFun.org or anywhere you listen.
Welcome.
Thank you.
No problem.
These are real podcast listeners, not actors.
What do you look for in a podcast?
Reliability is big for me.
Power.
I'd say comfort.
What do you think of this?
Oh.
That's Jordan, Jesse, Go.
Jordan, Jesse, Go?
They came out of the floor?
And down from the ceiling?
That can't be safe.
I'm upset.
Can we go now?
Soon. Jordan, Jesse, Go. A real podcast.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.